Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone, to the Capitol. This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:08 p.m. Friday, February 27, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Fields, Representative Kalum, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Representative Prox, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Representative Freer, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Dybert. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you very much. I would like to thank Cheryl Cole from Records and Renzo Moises from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today in House Resources, we will hear a minerals and mining update from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, the Office of Project Management Permitting, and the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys at the Department of Natural Resources. Today we have in the room Christy Collis, Director of Mining, Land, and Water, and presenting with her online we have Aaron Campbell, who is the Director of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, and Ashley Adoko, Director of Project Management and Permitting. Director Collis, welcome to the House Resources Committee room. Please come to the table, state your name for the record, and begin your presentation.
Right. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Christy Collis. I am the director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Thank you for having us here today to present on an update for minerals and mining. I'm going to pass it over to my colleague, Erin Campbell, to begin us off on her update from the Geological Geophysical Surveys.
Hi, Ms.
Good
Campbell.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Erin Campbell. I am the Alaska State Geologist and Director of the Alaska Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share a brief update on Alaska's mining industry. With your permission, I will start with slide number 3.
I believe...
On this slide, we have a map of 8 large mines in Alaska. We have one coal mine, the Usabelli Mine, and the rest are lode mines or hard rock mineral-producing mines. The size of these mines range from about 50 staff at the Dawson Mine to around 800 employees and contractors at Fort Knox. And we'll have more details on these mines on slide 10. Also, in Alaska, we have approximately 150 placer gold mines. And for these mines, they are mining sediments for minerals. They generally have from 1 to 25 employees. And although these are smaller operations combined, they have a contribution to mineral production similar to one of our larger mines. We have roughly 60 mining exploration projects, and those are projects that are in the geologic exploration phase up to permitting, and we will expand on this in slide 11. And we also have approximately 80 aggregate mines, and these mines, sand, gravel, and rock are not quite as glamorous as our gold mines, but they are crucial for construction. The closer an aggregate source is to a project, the better the economics are for that project. And so most of these aggregate mines are near urban areas. We can change to slide 4.
Yes, before we move to a slide, we have a question from Representative Fields.
Through the chair, I was curious if the department is aware of how many full-time jobs are associated with the 150 placer mines.
Ms. Campbell?
Madam Chair, Representative Fields, I'm afraid we don't have that information. Is that something we could try to research for you, if you would like?
Yes, please.
We will do that.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On slide 4, The mining industry has substantial financial impact on the state in terms of both taxes and expenditures. Our first bullet is on production value, and we have estimated a value of $5.58 billion, and that is based on the average metal price for 2025 multiplied by the volume of metals produced. The reason this is an estimate is because the 2025 numbers are not yet fully reported, and we've had to forecast the fourth quarter production. On that table to the right, it shows the range of production volumes for each mineral that we have used for our estimate. And the fourth bullet under production value shows the average value of the metal price that was used for the calculation. But our final numbers on this will be published in our 2025 minerals report. The next two bullets are exploration expenditures versus development expenditures. And again, we have a range of numbers here because the 2025 reporting isn't quite complete. Now, in terms of what falls under exploration and what falls under development, exploration is everything up to building the mine, while development is the process of becoming a mine. So exploration includes geological studies, geophysical studies, drill cores, engineering studies, and permitting. And we do expect to see an increase in exploration expenditures in 2026. Development includes construction, which has very high initial costs, but there are also continued development costs after construction that include defining the reserves, maintenance, and these costs are lower, but they are ongoing. So our development numbers will probably be dropping relative to past years because the Manh Choh mine came online in late 2024, so the large construction costs will not be included, and we currently have no new projects in development. Shall we turn to slide number five?
Yeah, Ms. Campbell, before we have a question on this slide, slide four. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I was curious through the co-chair if we can assume that production value is similar to gross revenue.
Madam Chair and Representative Fields, that I believe that would be true. It is not taking into account taxes or expenses.
Right. Can I ask a follow-up?
Follow-up?
Then, if that is true through the chair, would it be accurate to assume that pre-tax profits would be roughly 5.58 minus, say, 320 plus 350, so about $4.8 billion in pre-tax profit? Is that ballpark an accurate assumption, do you think?
Madam Chair and Representative Fields, I don't think that would be the case because there are expenditures that have not been subtracted out from that production value.
Could I ask a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Fields.
Thank you. So what, that's what I was curious about, is what other expenditures in terms of operation are not addressed in this slide? And do we have a sense of what that cost is? Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Fields, we have used this production value because that is the number that is generally reported by other jurisdictions. We haven't subtracted out the taxes and expenditures because they can be difficult to forecast before the mining companies report them. Would you like us to follow up on this with you?
Yes, please.
Okay, and before we move to the next slide, I have a couple in the queue, Ms. Campbell. We have Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Brett Fields gets kind of down to the nuts and bolts of this. Does the department collect information, business operation information, and our business is owning and making resources available, but is there some way of calculating where this is going. If there is 275 to 320 million in exploration predicted over the next however many years, we can expect 5% of them to go into production or something like that.
Ms. Campbell.
Madam Chair, Representative Prox, I am not sure that we can answer that. I'm not sure if it would be better answered by Department of Revenue or perhaps mining land and water.
Follow-up, Ms. Campbell.
Follow-up. Then for geological survey, that is sort of taking an inventory of what resources are available throughout Alaska. Is that a fair characteristic of the business purpose?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that would be correct.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So do you then have some sort of a map or a report that might give us some idea of future patterns, what to focus on first, what to focus on next?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think we're going to address that in slide 11, are the new mines that we believe have high potential.
Well, I will patiently wait.
All right. Representative Prox is excited for slide 11. Ms. Campbell, we have one more question on this slide. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My colleague has raised the question as to whether the production value of $5.6 billion minus about $670 million in exploration and development costs leaves $4.9 billion in profit. That just does not ring true to me. Does not allow for expenses, for royalties, for taxes, for Pilt like Red Dog. If we're going to have more information on this slide, I'd like to have any and all information that would help illustrate the reality of the mining industry economics in Alaska before we can make any assumptions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Sadler. Our next slide is actually going to be talking about some of the taxes that are paid by the mining industry, and that has not been deducted from this production value. So expenditures and taxes have not been subtracted from the production value. So that might help. And also the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys publishes an annual mining and minerals report that does compile the mineral industry report that does compile the information that we can obtain. Not all of it is available to the public, but we are currently publishing back. We're on year 2022 at this time. It's very difficult to compile this information, and we are trying to catch up. And that is probably the best source for that information that we have. But we'd be happy to follow up with you on this.
It's fascinating reading. I know. Thank you.
Ms. Campbell, we have one more question. I believe we're on slide 4. Representative Fields.
Thank you. And yes, this is actually, if you could go forward the slide that has average annual revenue for mining. Great. Thank you. I was curious through the chair. I assume most, if not all, of the large producing mines are C corps and therefore pay corporate income tax. Is that true? If so, is that part of the $97.5 million? If not, how much are these mines paying in corporate income tax? So, like Representative Sadler said, we could get a full picture. And I actually don't have any assumptions. I'm just trying to figure out the information because I realize I lack some basic information. Thank you.
Representative.
Madam Chair?
Yes, before I think we have Commissioner Crowther.
Representative Fields through the chair. For the record, John Crowther, Commissioner Designee here. I think that information would be with the Department of Revenue. We'd have to get back to the committee with that after cooperating with them
through
about
the
tax status
of the
corporation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Designee. All right. Ms. Campbell, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, if we can start on or turn to slide five. This slide illustrates the annual revenue from mining to state, municipalities, and native and regional and village corporations. So again, the final 2025 values are not yet available. So what we've done is we've based this on the averages from the past 5 years. But since we've seen so much variety in these values, what we have averaged may vary from the 2025 value when it's finally reported. The data come from the Alaska Mineral Industry Report that's published by DGGS, and it's compiled from many sources, including those within Department of Natural Resources and Department of Revenue. So what we're seeing is a state revenue of approximately $97.5 million, and that includes claim rentals, production royalties, mining license tax, Alaska Railroad revenue for transportation of coal, sand, and gravel. The fees include filing fees, bid bonus fees, and penalty fees. Also, state material sales are included, and this is all outlined in that Alaska Mineral Industry Report. The municipality revenue is forecast to be approximately $48.6 million in taxes, and native, regional, and village corporations could expect approximately $215.4 million. Are we ready to move to slide five or six?
I believe so. Representative Prox.
As long as we're here. The municipal revenue, is that direct taxes paid to the municipality?
Madam Chair, Representative Prox, yes, that is correct.
And is there any mine other than Fort Knox in the Fairbanks North Star Borough that contributes to municipal revenue?
Ms. Campbell?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't believe so.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, we have a follow-up from Co-Chair Freer.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Also, Red Dog Mine in the Northwest Arctic Borough.
They're paying property tax
have a PILT.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
One more question, Ms. Campbell, from Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. I think this is for the commissioner, too. So, you know, when we look at oil and gas, we can see very clearly, at least for ConocoPhillips, because Alaska is a large share of their assets. I think last year Conoco paid about a dollar in taxes for every dollar they earned in profits, which is kind of one way of looking at things. And if my rough numbers are right here, $97.5 million is about 1.7% of gross revenue. And I just wonder if the department could help us produce some apples-to-apples comparison for taxes relative to profits, taxes relative to gross revenue for the large producing mines versus oil and gas, just to contextualize things. It just would help me get a better picture of the economic landscape. Thank you.
Commissioner Designee.
Representative Fields, through the chair, John Crowther, for the record. We'd be happy to provide some more factual data about different metrics. I would say possibly the most relevant is we look to slide for the production value. You know, we could produce a total kind of market price production value for oil as a top line. As discussed, this slide and the department doesn't necessarily have information on operating expenses, which may be quite high. Happy to provide that to the committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Not so much a question as a statement. I appreciate the director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys entertaining questions about tax policy. I'm just thinking that these might be questions we might want to have in front of us, the Department of Revenue, because I know that this is a slide on the value. It's probably overviews. I'm not quite sure that Ms. Campbell is the best person to ask questions about why we tax what we do at what rate. Information is available to us, but this might not be the best effort.
Excellent point. Okay, please proceed, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would agree with the representative. We are much better at rocks than we are at finances. So we will now start to talk about the minerals themselves on slide number 6. So on this slide, the first thing to note on this graphic is that the numbers shown are resources and not reserves. And the difference between those two words is that resources are what is present in the ground and reserves are what can be produced economically, which is much more difficult to determine and varies with price. So on this map, we have a projection that is centered on the North Pole, and perhaps every map should have Alaska at the center, but it does tend to illustrate our position to be able to shift easily to international markets. And what this graphic is showing is the percent of resources that have been identified in Alaska relative to the rest of the world according to the U.S. Geologic Survey Global Commodity Sheet. So from a global perspective, Alaska alone really is an international player in the field of mining. And if you look at these 8 different resources that are listed, 5 of them are on the 2025 U.S. critical minerals list. That is zinc, lead, silver, copper, and graphite. And molybdenum is on the Canadian critical minerals list. So we will have more on these individual minerals and where industry is exploring for them on slide 8.
Thank you.
Before
we move to slide 8, thank you, Ms. Campbell. A question from Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, is this information, are we on slide 6, the map?
Which
is that
slide?
I don't have the numbers. I'm sorry. The one on the screen. Sorry.
Yeah,
Is this just taken from USGS data, or does Alaska supply some data independent of their estimates?
Madam Chair, Representative Prox, both of those are true. We supply data to the U.S. Geological Survey for their global commodity sheet, but we are comparing our numbers to their numbers for this calculation. Our internal numbers.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative. Please proceed, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you. We will now turn to slide 7, mineral exploration. And mineral exploration is the process of discovering new resources. And there is a lot of interest in Alaska at the moment. It has been notable at industry conventions that staff have attended. We are getting increased inquiries from mining companies. And really around the world, we're seeing a lot of financial and strategic movement in the business world regarding mining. So how do we know that Alaska in particular is catching the eye of industry as a good mining investment area? And for that, we turn to the Fraser Institute study for 2024. The 2025 survey has not been released yet, so we're looking at the results from 2024, which was a survey of 2,289 exploration, development, and mining-related companies around the world. And in this survey, Alaska ranked number 1 in mineral potential. Now, this is purely the geology, not including all the other considerations, but we ranked number 1 for geology among 82 worldwide jurisdictions in 2024. And we've averaged 5th over the past 2 decades. So this isn't new. Again, this doesn't account for the challenges of executing a mine here, the remoteness of Alaska. It's based purely on how fantastic the rocks are in this state. And Alaska is widely known for very large mineral deposits, or being what's called elephant country, and for having these resources at or close to the surface. Also in this study, Alaska ranked 3rd for investment attractiveness. We rose 8.5 points over the last year, and we also rose in our policy score by 1 point, taking us up to 17 out of 82, which puts us almost in the top 20% for the world. So although gold is the primary area of exploration at 46% of the exploration expenditures, we are seeing a rise in interest in polymetallic deposits. So these are deposits with multiple metals like gold, silver, copper, lead, and zinc. And those are up to 36% of the current exploration expenditures. And critical minerals are present in abundance in Alaska. In fact, we have 57 of the 60 critical minerals on the new 2025 U.S. critical minerals list. And the Division of Mining, Land, and Water will be providing more information on some of these exploration expectations for 2026 in their presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Questions on slide 7?
Yes, we have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the first bullet point, the increase in mining merger, M&A. I just read the news that Anglo American has merged or taken over or combined with Teck. Just from an Alaska mineral standpoint, should we consider that a positive development in Alaska, or maybe not so much? You're an industry expert. I thought I'd ask your opinion.
Ms. Campbell?
Madam Chair, Representative Sadler, we would consider that a positive.
Follow-up, why?
Follow-up? Ms. Campbell, yeah, he asked why.
Madam Chair, we think that a bigger company with more resources and more expertise has a higher chance of success in most cases.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Campbell. We have a question from Rep. Prox. Yeah.
Quick one. You mentioned, through the chair, you mentioned the Fraser Institute studies. Is the Fraser Institute, how shall I phrase it? Is that kind of the most authoritative reference for the mineral industry? Or is there something else that we should be looking at as well?
Madam Chair and Representative Cox, absolutely. That is the go-to study for the mining industry.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Let's move to slide number 8. Is that correct? No, slide number 8. The mineral exploration hotspots. Now, this map shows some specific exploration locations in triangles on the map, as well as zones of interest for mineral potential in large outlined colors. Let's start with the gold in the yellow color on the map. Gold prices are the highest they've ever been, which is driving exploration because things that were considered low grade in the past might be economic at current prices. The Donlin Gold Project, which is the yellow triangle furthest left, is 45 million ounces of gold resource and has been called one of our elephant deposits. The other gold triangles are the Lucky Shot Mine and the Johnson Tract Project. And the big yellow banana shape in the middle of the state is the zone in which we are likely to find gold based on the geology. And gold could also be in other places, but this is where we already know that the rocks are most prospective. The Pogo mine lies in that zone. Pogo has past production and reserves of more than 10 million ounces of gold, including their satellite deposits. The Fort Knox mine is in that zone, and that has past production and reserves of more than 10 million ounces of gold. Now, the reason that yellow zone has this funny shape is due to the geology of Alaska. It's the types of rocks that are found there and the faulting that has affected them. You'll see that the big, long green zone, which is copper, follows the same trend, also due to the geologic and tectonic events that affected Alaska and actually the entire northwestern part of the continent of North America. And this is why geologic maps are so important for mineral exploration. Within that green zone representing copper, this includes the Pebble Project and the Pyramid Project. And Pebble is widely considered to be the world's largest undeveloped copper-gold deposit with 41 million tons of copper and 106 ounces of gold. million ounces of gold. Now, the smaller green bean shape up north is the Ambler Mineral Belt, in which the Arctic deposit is thought to be one of the world's highest grade copper deposits, as well as having lead, zinc, gold, and silver. Now, if we move to the blue triangles, those are hot spots for zinc, lead, silver, and germanium. All of these are critical minerals. So the upper left is the Red Dog Mine. And the Red Dog Mine and its satellite deposits are another elephant deposit with world-class zinc, lead, and silver, and over 33 million tons of zinc, which is one of the largest deposits in the world, 10 million tons of lead, and 300 million ounces of silver, which is the largest in the United States, and it is the only germanium producer in the United States. But the Red Dog Mine is scheduled to have mined out its deposit by 2031, and we'll talk about that more on slide 10. So they are exploring for more resources in that area, hence the triangle on this map. The lower blue triangle is Illinois Creek, and this was a gold-silver mine that hasn't been in production since 2022, but Western Alaska Copper and Gold is looking for new resources in that area. Going to the red triangles, that is antimony, which is a critical mineral. And there is currently a shortage of antimony in the United States due to restrictions from China. So presently, the price is quite high. But there is a big antimony mine in Idaho that should go online in 2028 that could supply all of U.S.'s requirements. So after 2028, the antimony price will likely go down. But there is antimony potential in Alaska. There was past production in the Fairbanks area in the Fort Knox region. And then the red triangle on the lower left, that is the Alaska Range Department of Defense project by Alaska Range Resources, which is a subsidiary of Nova Minerals. And it was awarded a $43.4 million Defense Production Act grant by the U.S. Department of War in late 2025. And that funding was authorized to establish a domestic onshore supply chain for antimony, which is a critical mineral used in ammunition. Are there any questions on slide 8?
Yes, thank you. We have a question from Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. This seems like a good time to ask a question about the Critical Minerals Accelerator through the university. Maybe it's for the commissioner. I think critical minerals development is very important for the state. I am worried that our budget situation will make it challenging to find $3 million in general funds for the accelerator. And I think my question is it possible to explore a partnership with industry where we could appropriate 3 million DGF, in which the producing mines with an interest in critical mineral development might be able to share that $3 million burden this year until I hope we have a healthier fiscal environment in the very near future? And obviously, I don't expect to have a answer to this unexpected question right now, but would appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Commissioner Designee.
Thank you for the question, Representative Fields. The department has certainly been engaged with supporting the university's pursuit of that accelerator through sharing the expertise that we already have at DGGS. Happy to look at what kind of industry participation and partnerships might be able to further support it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Campbell, looks like no further questions on this slide. It's a great slide. I love maps. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We all love maps over here as well. Going to slide number 9, I am going to take the opportunity to explain how the work of DGGS benefits the mineral industry. And I mentioned how important it is to understand the geology in order to find mineral resources, and I wanted to explain how our work is actually utilized. So geologic maps tell you about rock types and where those rocks are located and where the faults are located that affect those rocks. The maps are often accompanied by reports with rock ages, rock chemistry, all data used to identify mining potential. And so what about areas where the surface is covered by trees or soil? That's where geophysical surveys help us to see into the subsurface, and we can cover large areas quickly. Those surveys identify characteristics of rocks like magnetics or radioactivity, which is used to identify mineral systems. So this map here shows the location of our newest geophysical surveys. The bright colors are data that are already released, and note how it follows the trend of the big green and yellow bananas from slide 8. And the blue and yellow areas on the map indicate surveys that are currently in progress. Our next survey for 2026, we are looking towards Seward Peninsula, and that area is outlined or shaded in red. So at DGGS, we do these baseline geologic studies and geologic mapping and geophysics, and we release all the data to the public to attract the interest of industry, who then come in with a large exploration budget to identify and delineate the prospects. And one example of the use of our data was that in 2025, Tenova Resources Corporation acquired its Tin Silver Coal Creek property just south of the Alaska Range with a land package of 4,000 acres across 25 mineral claims and a historical resource of tin. And their decision to move forward was in part due to assistance from the Geologic Survey. Our geologists directed them to maps, even some maps that were dated back to 1998. So the mapping never gets old. Maps are still useful today. They help them locate and understand existing data, and Tenova moved forward with their exploration of the area. Our Geologic Materials Center in Anchorage is a repository of geologic samples and data that are also used heavily by the mining industry. And notably, our hyperspectral scanner has received its national electrical certification and was finally powered up this week for the very first time. And so our test scanning will likely begin in March, and we've had several mining companies ask to scan their samples. And so we are looking forward to some excellent results from that new equipment. And we are proud to say also that in the Fraser Institute 2024 study, Alaska ranked first in the U.S. jurisdiction for its geological database. We came in 23rd internationally, but we're still in the top 25%. Now, for the past several years, Alaska has been the recipient of large amounts of funding from the USGS-funded Earth MRI program on critical mineral research, and the funding Alaska has received exceeds most of the support that other states receive. And an example of a success story from our Earth MRI work, if you remember on slide 8, the exploration hotspot slide, the lower blue triangle was the Illinois Creek mine. Well, that benefited from some work we did from a fiscal year 2023 capital project that funded airborne geophysics near the former Illinois Creek mine. And those data led to exploration of new mineral targets and a silver zinc lead discovery by Alaska Silver Corp in 2025. So we partner closely with industry to ensure that we're providing the types of data they need, both in geology and geophysics. We truly value the input from the mining industry to guide our work, and in fact, we just initiated an online survey to industry to make sure we are on track and to help us redirect if needed. Any questions on slide 9?
I believe we do, from Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. This seems to be the core business, pardon the pun. How are we doing as far as there's some ultimate goal of, I don't know, detail coverage, I don't know what, but this activity of, I'm guessing it's satellite and aerial imagery, keeping us towards the top of what industry is looking for to encourage exploration? Or is there work to be done?
Ms. Campbell?
Madam Chair and Representative Prox, you mean in competition with Canada and Australia or with other states in the United States?
Yes and yes.
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Prox, You know, that's a difficult question. Alaska is very different from the rest of the states, as we all know. The remoteness is both a benefit and a disadvantage in terms of geologic work. There is a lot less coverage here than there is in other states, so we have a lot of catching up to do. We are doing our best to try to anticipate what's going to be needed 2 years from now, because that is about how long it takes these studies to go forward. So we've been pretty successful so far. In terms of a overall goal, it would be wonderful to have coverage across the entire state, but that's not fiscally realistic. So we do our best to try to anticipate what might be needed. Only 23% of the state has geologic map coverage at the appropriate scale. And so we are continuing to chip away at that and try to direct our work in the areas where it will have the greatest benefit.
Follow-up.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, is that work, is that primarily in response to federal grants, DOD grants, whatever grants, or is that state spending? Are you limited? What's limiting your work?
Ms. Campbell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Cox. Our staff are partially funded off the general fund and partially funded from federal grants. The actual work itself is generally funded by federal grants, with some CIP funds as well, for which we are very grateful. And we have been very successful in getting these federal grants, and I don't see us sort of losing that position of being perceived at the federal level to be a very good investment for federal funding. Of course, with more funding, we could do more. That's the truth. That's the case for every division, every department, anywhere.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, seeing no further questions on this slide, please proceed.
All right, let's move to slide number 10, Alaska's existing mine timeline. And these are data that are from talks, press releases, and annual reports, so it's all publicly available data. What happens is that mining companies announce their mine life based on a number of factors. Mostly it's based on the amount of reserves and the mining rate that dictate how long a mine can continue to operate without finding additional reserves. But they do sometimes find additional reserves. For example, for some time, Kensington Mine has only forecast a couple years of mine life, but they continue to find more ore. So we'll go through these one at a time, starting with Red Dog Mine. And Teck has stressed that 2031 is the end of their ore, and that's why they are accelerating exploration and hopefully development of the Anarak deposit. For Fort Knox Mine, Kinross has announced for years that 2030 was the end of mining for the Fort Knox Mine, but continued high gold prices may extend that mine life. For the Pogo Mine, Northern Star has enough gold resources for at least 10 years, and they have not announced an end of mine life. And they also have several exploration projects that will likely add to their gold reserves and extend that life. The Usabelli Coal Mine has enough for the foreseeable future. The Manh Choh Mine, Kinross has announced a 2028 date as their end of mine life. The Kensington Mine, again, they have been able to replace their reserve for years, so we are optimistic that the mine could continue past 2027. The Greens Creek Mine will likely mine past 2037, and the Dawson Mine has a very long life anticipated. Are there any questions on slide 10?
Yes, we have a question from Representative Sadler.
Yes, Chair. Briefly, Ms. Campbell, we mentioned Fort Knox and Manh Choh. I understand that they're complementary. Will extension of one lead to extension of the other? Is the life of one dependent on the activity at the other?
Madam Chair, Representative Sadler, it could be. I'm not sure that we have. It depends on what other sources they might identify. So that would be a little hard to predict.
Okay.
For us.
We'll watch.
Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you. Let's turn to my last slide, Alaska's potential new mines. And this is slide number 11. So of the 60 active exploration projects that we mentioned on slide 3, there are a number that look like they are heading towards production. And so these are ones that have mine permitting in process. The Office of Project Management and Permitting will be able to talk about this much more in terms of dates and processes. But as you can see from this list, Alaska truly has the potential to produce a variety of commodities in the future in a wide range of areas across the state. Are there any questions on this slide?
Co-Chair Freer.
Thank you. I don't have a question on the slide, but was that the end of your portion of the presentation?
Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, correct. That is my last slide.
I do have a question.
Okay.
Through the co-chair.
Fear.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, thank you for your presentation, Ms. Campbell. I just have an overall question about the geological and geophysical surveys, the division. So how is your division implementing the governor's administrative order 360? How are you selecting regulations to propose for repeal?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Designee.
Yeah, Co-Chair Freer, for the record, John Crowther, Commissioner Designee. So the governor's AO 360 is focused on regulatory activities. The Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys has very, very few regulations. They're primarily associated with the pricing and distribution of geologic data, so they're very perfunctory in what one typically thinks of as a regulatory requirement for industry or the public. So the department's focused on reductions in other divisions as opposed to within those fees, just because they're we want them to be as efficient as possible, but they're not a requirement for compliance with the general public or industry.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the co-chair to Commissioner Crowther, I think I'm going to establish a pattern, and I'm going to ask the questions of the other same question of the other division directors as well. And you can certainly answer, but how I just want to know how it's being implemented. How are the regulations being selected for repeal?
Commissioner Designee Crowther.
Yeah, Co-Chair Freer. Again, John Crowther for the record. We can have our other division directors speak to that as they appear before the committee. The Office of Project Management and Permitting is in a very similar position to DGGS in that they directly apply very few regulatory authorities, so they at a division level don't have a AO 360 tasking or obligation. As a general matter, the AO is focused on clarifying duplicative regulations, so we're identifying regulations that are ambiguous or duplicative of other authorities. Certainly things that are highly burdensome are getting reviewed. That list of what may be highly burdensome has been developed both from internal input and the public input we solicited earlier in the process. So we're continuing to follow the step-by-step process laid out in that AO, and we can summarize that at a division level for the co-chairs as you'd be interested.
Thank you. I would appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner Designee Crowther. We have a question from Representative Sadler.
It is a question. Thank you. Ms. Campbell, slide 11 again. I'm excited to see a dozen or more potential new mines. And for integrity's sake, I'm going to somewhat contradict my earlier assertion that revenue might be a better department than DNR to ask to address fiscal questions. But given these potential mines, any perspective you might offer as to whether changes in the state's mineral taxation or fiscal terms might affect the possibility of delays or cancellations, or conversely, the acceleration of any of these new mining projects?
Ms. Campbell?
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a very difficult question, and I think, you know, any change impacts the economics, but to what degree would be difficult to quantify, and again, I think, yeah, that we might not be the best to answer that.
That's fair. Thank you.
Okay. And we have a question from Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner, you just mentioned fees. And are they significant? I'm kind of wondering if the division is a capital expense on trying to figure out our inventory of sales. Or is that a worthwhile? It could be an advertising expense, or is the department actually getting significant support from fees?
Representative Prax, through the chair, John Crowther, for the record, the fees that I referenced earlier are associated with the kind of cost of distribution of geologic data. So the intent of those fees is to recover department costs, not to be a profit center, and the rationale for that being that we want to make the data available as broadly as possible for incentivizing exploration.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Thank you, just for clarifying that.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Great question. Thank you, Commissioner Designee. Crowther, Ms. Campbell, I believe that is all of the questions for this part of the presentation. You're off the hook.
Thank you.
Thank you for your knowledge and expertise. Okay. Next, we are moving on to Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Please state your name and begin your presentation.
Great. Thank you so much. Christy Collis. I'm the director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. So we're going to move from our scientific arm of the Department of Natural Resources and more to the authorizations that we issue to support our mining industry on state lands. But before I get into some of those pieces, I want to talk a little bit about some things happening on the federal level that are really exciting that will impact the mining industry and other infrastructure on state lands. So recently we had a rescission order for public land order 5150 and 5180. And you can see on this map, it's along the Dalton Highway corridor, so north of the Yukon River. Everything in red is our priority one selections. Everything in orange is priority two, yellow is three, and then the gray is four. These lands are critical in reaching a lot of minerals that we have that are stranded right now with federal lands being between us and the state lands, Ambler District being one of them. And so this public land order is going, once it's lifted, our selections can attach, and then we can actually bring in those lands, especially our priority ones and twos, which have infrastructure and access. So we're really excited to have that happen. This is decades in the making. And so this this was noticed in the public federal register on Wednesday of this week. So it's a very exciting moment for all of us at the department. I've been working really closely with the Bureau of Land Management, Department of Interior, to make this happen. So very excited about that particular change. We still have about 5 million acres of land left in our entitlement. So once we get this moved, we can start bringing in the remaining land entitlement to state ownership. And then we also have the Tongass roadless rural rescission that happened, opened over 9 million acres of land for infrastructure development, mining, timber, harvesting, allows for better management. Excited about that happening as well. It doesn't impact as much state lands, but overall it's a positive for, I think, our mining industry and all of the infrastructure and resource development. We also have, hopefully, this is something that got noticed recently. It was the BLM conservation landscape rule. So this was put into effect by the Biden administration in 2023. The proposal for the rescission of the rule occurred in September of 25. This is viewed by us as a critical step in restoring state sovereignty and unlocking economic potential. The rule added unnecessary hurdles and regulatory red tape that would delay permitting for vital infrastructure and energy projects, and its removal would restore multiple use balance. BLM has returned to a framework that seems to be prioritizing active resource development, which is the original mandate of the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. And then also we're just having a lot of good partnership with our federal agencies. One example of that is our Placer Mining Resource Network. This is a joint effort with BLM, the Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and small placer miners. We're trying to work together with them to get a handbook that's going to be released that will talk about permitting information, revegetation, reclamation. This will be very helpful for those that are looking to stake claims and start doing exploration and developing of our resources. Any questions on that slide?
I believe we do. Okay. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. I guess to focus, my interest, of course, would be on the pipeline corridor. And some people have been thinking about that for a long time, and a lot of other people have just been discouraged. But how does that change the Division of Mining, Land, and Water strategy moving forward, business strategy for getting return on that land? What can be done because now we have possession of the land?
Ms. Yak.
Through the chair, Representative Prax. So the pipeline itself will be authorized through our Division of Oil and Gas, our pipeline coordinator section. So they actually would be the one to authorize that. And I believe, Commissioner Designee Crowther could speak on that a little bit more, but the right-of-way for that has already been established. But, of course, it's great if it can come onto state lands and not federal land. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to work with our federal partners on getting that right-of-way over into state management. But when it comes to the lands themselves, we have a area plan that the Northeast Alaska area plan that we were out for public notice. Commissioner Designee Crowther just signed the adoption order, so those lands will be classified. So once they come into state ownership, they'll have kind of already a classification order with them so we can start utilizing those lands as the public and the agency has determined are appropriate. We still need to go through the steps. We're getting close. This was a major step, having it noticed in the Federal Register. Mm-hmm. But we still have to have a lifting order that's going to happen after 30 days in the Federal Register. Then we'll have to get an official TA from the federal government for us to bring in those lands. So we still have a little ways to go, but we're making a lot of steps, like adopting the Northeast Alaska Area Plan to be able to manage these lands as soon as they come into state ownership. And I don't know if Commissioner Designee wants to say anything further.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up. I guess sort of what I'm thinking is, should we drop everything we're doing and focus on this now, or spend a little money here and there, think about it some more, or maybe over 10 or 15 years develop a plan?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, I think we're super excited and we're hoping that we can start moving this as quickly as possible. I think it's really important for us to be thinking ahead of how we can utilize these lands to best move the state forward. I don't know if Commissioner Designee wants to say something more on that.
Representative Prox, through the chair, John Crowther for the record, I think it's, land management strategy is a long-term long-term undertaking, and we view these as long-term assets. You know, they have the potential, obviously, to continue to see revenue from the pipeline corridor, but we are working to understand what other kind of infrastructure they may facilitate. And so it's not just the revenue and the planning for these lands themselves, but this opens up our control and access to hosts of state land in the northern and central parts of our state. So it's a long-term planning effort and execution effort.
Right. Well, as you can tell, I'm mostly excited about that because that affects the interior. But probably shouldn't plan on opening a restaurant at Coldfoot next month.
Thank you, Representative Prox. We have a question from Representative Kalum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, to the Director. So just on the BLM rule, two questions. One, do you know about what percentage of Alaska is owned by BLM? And two, this doesn't revert lands back to the state. It's just saying that they're it's easier to develop on the lands. Did I hear that right?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, I don't have the percentage off the top of my head for what is owned by BLM. Maybe Commissioner Designee does. But to your other question, which now is escaping me.
The rule doesn't give the land back to us. Yes. It says they're more friendly to development.
Through the chair, Representative Colomb. Yes, so the land was never taken from us. It's a rule that they were going to have on their land, but it can impact us. So because we're adjacent to a lot of federal lands, if they have a lot of rules on their lands that prohibit any kind of development or access, that could really hinder and impact our ability to get through those lands to state lands, or individuals that are trying to get through those lands to get to state lands. So it's better partnership, better good neighbor is kind of what we're looking at with the federal government rescinding this rule. So we're hopeful that that will happen.
Great. And I have a question. I have a lot of placer miners in my district who want to go out in around the interior and possibly start their own mine. If the handbook that you mentioned, is that downloadable? Or if I talk to folks next summer, where can they find that handbook? I think,
Madam Co-Chair, so I'm not 100% sure on that, but I can definitely get back to you, and we can make sure that you have that information, so you could pass that out once it's delivered. But I would believe, as we have, everything is more technology-driven, that would make a whole lot of sense to have it online.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Collis. Please proceed.
Great. So some of the mining trends, I'm not going to go into too much depth because you heard a lot from my colleague, Director Campbell, but we are definitely seeing a lot more exploration activity. So with the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, our mining section, they are the ones that take in all of the claims that people stake, and they've seen a really large increase. So 2,500 mining claims from September through December. That's twice as many claims as we would normally see, so it's quite a bit of an increase. We're pretty excited. Staff are tired, but it's a lot of work to manage those claims. But it's a good sign, and we're excited to see that trend going up. A lot more walk-ins. We're seeing a lot more large claim blocks being staked by companies. There's 745 active APMA permits being issued, and that's a 13% increase over the last 2 years. So overall, just seeing kind of that increase of mining state mining claims being staked, and then also those exploration permits going out. And then we think that's attributed to the exploration funding, improved capital markets, especially in Canada and Australia. I think Australia is really interested in Alaska and what we have to offer for our minerals, and then direct federal investment in critical mineral companies in Alaska.
Also, and I think OPUMP will probably talk a little bit more about this, Director Adoko, but just a lot more expansion that we're hearing about in smaller mines, smaller deposits that are very rich in minerals. It seems to be that they're a little bit looking at it differently for infrastructure, so they're looking at those deposits, just like Manh Choh, because they were able to ship the ore over into Fort Knox. It made that deposit more financially viable, and it seems to be that that's something that more companies are looking at. So overall, just increased in that critical minerals. Antimony, I think, was mentioned as well from Director Campbell. So overall, just excited to see the interest in Alaska. Our staff are staying busy, and we've got a lot of work ahead of us. But with more land coming in, if we can bring in that 1.4 million acres north of the Yukon, we'll still have a remaining 3 million plus acres. That's more land for us to look at for further responsible resource development.
Yeah, bless you. Any questions on this part of the... All right. Thank you.
We'll turn it over to Director Ashley Adoko. Okay.
Hello, for the record, Ashley Adoko, OPUMP, and I'm pleased to share some additional highlights from the last year with you folks today. So starting a little bit with our role, for projects that opt into OPUMP coordination, we can implement multi-agency coordination, and the goal is to ensure consistent, defensible, transparent, and timely permit decisions. And just as Director Hollis was discussing, we have also seen an increase in exploration activities, so sharing a few highlights with you today. Starting with the Actigraq and Anarak Exploration Program, there was state and federal permitting issues in 2025, and a couple quick notes on timelines. In 2025, state permitting took less than 4 months on an individual state authorization basis. That was on the Actigraq Anarak Exploration Program. And the issuance of the USACE authorization, the Corps of Engineers authorization, was also seen. There was the Greens Creek mine also, that saw federal permitting. The surface exploration associated with that mine is on the federal FAST 41 transparency dashboard, and we saw the Forest Service issue that authorization, so we were excited to see that. The Palmer project is under new ownership, and this La Copper, it is planning a drill season in 2026, and there was none in 2025, so excited to see that increase in exploration there. We're also seeing movement forward in developing mines. So starting with the Graphite Creek project, in 2025, the Corps of Engineers authorization application was submitted and NEPA was initiated, and they're continuing to prepare for state permitting. On the Donlin Gold Mine in 2026, we anticipate NEPA continuing. It's been initiated, and that's in response to a court order to analyze impacts of larger tailing spill scenario. On the Arctic project, there's renewed focus on planning for federal and state permitting, and we think this is based on progress on Ambler Road. So the application for the Corps of Engineers authorization is anticipated to be submitted quarter one of this year, 2026. Then I'll go into a little bit on expansion of existing mines. So there's the satellite deposits at Red Dog and Pogo. Red Dog has the Ocalup pit. The expansion north of that is on the federal FAST 41 transparency dashboard. In 2024, we saw state and federal permitting associated with that. The state permitting took less than 1 month on an individual state authorization basis, and we saw issuance of the Corps of Engineers authorization. On Pogo, they're planning to submit state permitting applications soon, and that will encompass an additional deposit and for operations in the potential expansion area. And finally, on this slide, regarding major expansions at Fort Knox, Kensington, and Greens Creek, a few highlights for Fort Knox. They submitted their applications for Phase 11 expansion this month, so February 2026. and Greens Creek were anticipating tailings expansion activity. So that's what I have for you on that slide today, and I'm happy to take questions or move to the next slide.
Thank you, Ms. Sodoko. We have a couple of questions. We'll begin with Representative Klum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Director, I'm sorry, it was a little bit hard for me to understand. Can you clarify what you said about the court order at Donilon? What did you say about that,
Ms. Sodoko?
Sure. So on Donilon, the NEPA process has been initiated, and that is in response to a court order that directed that there be additional analysis on impacts to or based on larger tailing spill scenario.
Okay.
So they're now implementing that, and that's been started.
Okay, and can I have one more question?
A follow-up?
So the other thing, when you were talking about Greens Creek Mine, you referenced a transparency dashboard. Is that something the department does?
Oh, Representative, through the chair, that is something that is on the federal Fast 41 dashboard. It's a website they host.
Okay, yeah, I know that. Okay, thank you. Sorry. Just need clarification.
No. Perfect. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, is there, what should I say, a recommended site to our sources, media, to follow the mining industry? We don't have time to spend hours and hours and hours finding it or following it. The newspapers are not a good place to follow to get good information. But is there some place where you look to get a general idea of what's going on with mining in Alaska?
I believe that would be for Commissioner Designee.
Yeah, happy to speak to that. Representative Prox, through the chair, John Crowther, for the record. Two sources I'd recommend following, our Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys does do the mineral, the annual minerals report. It is annualized, so it's not a minute-to-minute update, but it has a very good overview of the industry at a lot of different scales. And then our Office of Project Management and Permitting does maintain a large mine permitting team website where regulatory and permitting updates on these key mines are available. So those are two department resources I'd recommend. And I'm sure there's other resources outside of the department as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yep, great question for the public as well. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. This is a pitch, I guess, having just come from them this morning. The Alaska Miners Association is an industry advocacy group that does a very good job of keeping information up to date on their website and hard copies. So they welcome our participation and attendance at their events. I find great value from attending their meetings.
All right, Ms. Sodoko, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with my next slide, it's titled Innovating Through Opportunity, and I'll highlight the Fast 41, and the term comes from the Fixing America's Surface Transportation, and it's in Title 41 of the federal regulation. So FAST 41, Memorandum of Understanding that was entered into between the state and the Permitting Council, and it includes opportunities to identify and fill gaps in federal agencies' Alaska and Arctic experience, also support timely and effective federal agencies' environmental reviews and permitting, benefit from secure and efficient data and document sharing, and avoid duplication efforts and timeline extensions. And there are three Fast 41 covered mines that are also opted into OPUMP coordination. Both Fast 41 and OPUMP are voluntary programs. So the three mines that are opted into Fast 41 as covered projects are also opted into OPUMP coordination. And those are Greens Creek, I apologize, Graphite Creek, Donlin Gold, and the Johnson Tract Mine. There are also three Fast 41 transparency mines, and this is getting back to the topic to the dashboard available through this
this federal government agency. And those three are also opted into OPAP coordination. And there's that update as of yesterday, I believe, the discussing opting into is now opted into with all three. And that is Greens Creek, the Ogallala Pit, which is the expansion there at Red Dog, and the Nikolai Project. And so we look forward to continuing opportunities through this. And that is my final note there, and happy to take questions or pass it back to you, Madam Chair.
Excellent, Ms. Odoko. We have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Odoko, earlier Representative Fields asked a question about cooperation between private sector and the state in bearing the costs of projects. I'm not sure if you made it real clear that the OPUMP model, what the financing arrangement is between private and public work on large projects under the OPUMP model. I'm going to offer you the opportunity to expand on that, please.
Yes, thank you, Representative Sadler, through the chair. Yes, OPUP is a voluntary program that was started in the 90s by wise folks in the state that saw opportunity for there to be benefits from a primary state point of contact when there are multiple authorizations that are needed for large projects. And in these cases, the applicant has the option to opt in, we call it, with my office, OPUP. And that entails signing an MOU, and then the applicant pays for our services to facilitate and work with them through that coordinated process. And we bring all the state folks together and take a team approach to the project and also work with our federal agencies as well.
Follow-up.
So to put a fine point, industry is paying for the work to help navigate our laws without the state having to put dollars forward on its behalf. Is that correct?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any final thoughts or questions for Ms. Odoko? We have one from Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, when we talked about exploration activity somewhere, slide 7. Anyway, do you have an idea of how much of an increase there has been, and is there some sort of a map or a report on where the exploration is occurring? Because that's really quite important to local economies. We don't make a lot of money off of exploration at the state level, but it's a real benefit to local economies.
Ms. Odoko.
Thank you, Representative Pratt, through the chair. Yes, as far as information on where they are, I think there could be resources from our DGGS folks through Director Campbell's office with pictures, for example, of what these are. And the ones I spoke to are associated with the mines that are in development. So Actigraph and Honorat, actually that one, I do apologize, is working toward development. And then Greens Creek Mine is in development and looking to explore and expand. And then Palmer, yes, also looking to explore. And if they do then get into either added development or development as a whole, that will absolutely then bring back benefits to the local economy and others.
Follow up?
Okay. Well, thank you for that. It's important for, again, in the interior, there's a lot of work going on. You hear helicopters flying around and whatnot. And there might be a need to kind of pre-address potential impacts and land use policy and get all kinds of other groups involved. Mm. And it's better, it's a pain, but it's better to do that up front than in response to complaints later. Mm. I think, at any rate.
Any further? Thank you for that, Representative Prox. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Doko. The term the Fast 41 transparency. A silly question, I guess, but is that dashboard solely of projects that have entered the FAST-41 process, or is it for any projects that the Permitting Council might want to have placed in the transparency dashboard?
Ms. Sodoko?
Thank you, Representative Souther, through the chair. The applicant would go to the Permitting Council and discuss with them and then work to either be a covered or a transparency project. It's one or the other. And I know the Permitting Council has criteria that they have to look at that has to be satisfied before deciding that, yes, some project can be a covered project, and that would get them more engagement, I believe, through that agency. And the criteria involves things like has to go through an environmental review analysis, have a certain dollar figure associated with the project as a whole, et cetera. I believe it's somewhat discretionary at the executive director of the Permitting Council level regarding what is accepted as a transparency project. And I believe that one of President Trump's executive orders is what created that transparency project opportunity. And so any project that really is a benefit to the nation as a whole might want to see itself up there and then if they're opting in and discretion of the council, then they can go up on that dashboard.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
So the transparency, and any project manager or sponsor can ask for their project to be placed on the dashboard and get the benefits of such transparency, right?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that is my understanding.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Sodoko. Any further thoughts or comments? All right, Ms. Sodoko, I think I don't see any other questions or comments, so we are complete. Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Wonderful. Seeing no further questions or comments, that completes our agenda for House Resources Committee meeting today. Thank you to Director Collis, Commissioner Designee Crowther, thank you for being here to answer questions, and our presenters. I know that some folks asked for some information, and we will work to get you that this week or next week. That completes the agenda. Our next Resources Committee meeting is Monday, March 2nd, 2026. Where the committee will hear an update from the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, ADA. So the time is 2:30 p.m., and this hearing of the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.